So we are in verse number 21, which is called Recharge the Mind. About 2 weeks ago, we had talked about the importance of silence, because in meditation, when the mind becomes quiet, that silence is not an empty silence of nothingness, but a silence full of energy, full of consciousness. And you will notice that when your mind is very quiet, been able to stay in that silence for a while, you have much more energy, but a very positive energy, not a destructive energy, but from the calmness of your being emerges this energy, which can then carry you on the spiritual path and also in your world. So that was the beginning of this chapter, which we had done 2 weeks ago. Last week, we talked about these few qualities of Brahman or the Atman up to the red line, where Brahman is the all-pervading consciousness, which is the support and the substratum of this universe, the illuminator, which gives life to everybody. And in me, that Brahman expresses as Om, but expresses everywhere. It's also there in the plant, in the bird, in the fish, also in the chair. Difference, of course, between the chair and the tree is the chair is inert and the tree is conscious, or the animal or the bird knows, but the chair does not. So in objects, it is as existence, sat, but in the living beings, that same consciousness presents as consciousness or chit. So existence and consciousness are the two factors or qualities of this Brahman, and then ultimately the contact with that inner Brahman results in bliss. So that's what we had talked about last time, some of the qualities. These are all very important qualities, and one should remember they are not only qualities of Brahman. Brahman is not God, is not somebody out there, you know. They are qualities of me. That I we have to never forget that I am unattached, I am immortal, I am eternal, I am ever pure. Never forget that, because otherwise you are always objectifying that there is some consciousness and sometime in the future I will reach it, I will know it, I will attain it. No, that consciousness is me. All I have to do is discover it. I have lost it and I need to discover it. So that is the essence of the teachings. So these qualities, each one of them, you can apply in your meditation. When your mind becomes still through chanting or through watching your breath, then in that stillness, you then have that only one thought. I am immortal. I am existence. I am ever pure. And ultimately, even that thought disappears into that deep silence. So that is the stepwise progression in meditation. So we have done these qualities so far. So now let us do a few more qualities of this Brahman, this total consciousness, which is also me. So it is says, I am countless and I am formless. So what do we mean by countless? Countless means all these forms are nothing but that one consciousness, whether it's tree, bird, plant, fish, chair, table, but at the same time, even though all forms are him, he is formless. And that is a strange paradox, because how can you say that all forms are me or that? Me and that and I am that, you know, that is me and it's the same. How can you say all forms are that at the same time that is formless? Some examples we can use, like mud has no form, right? Mud is formless. Mud has no particular shape, no particular form, is diffuse. But from mud, you can make all beautiful forms. You can make cups, saucers, plates. Gold, when it comes in the, when you get it from the mine or from the ground or from the river, it is formless. It has no particular shape, but then you can make different ornaments. So similarly, that consciousness, which is by nature formless, is responsible for all the forms. Every form is me. So everything is me. That I have to say, that this chair is me, this table is me, he is me, she is me. So that I has to be immediately transferred. Don't ever think of Brahman as this entity out there. It is the entity out there, but it is also entity as me. And why do we say God is formless? Because we have this idea that this particular form is God. And that is nothing wrong with that. Somebody loves Jesus. Okay, for me, Jesus is the form, or Krishna is the form, or Shiva is the form. And that is good. There's nothing wrong with that. Because the formless, it is very difficult to love the formless. Right? If I say, okay, sit and contemplate upon the formless, love the form, you can't. But I can develop a relationship of love with Krishna, or with Jesus, or with Guru Nanak, or with Buddha. So for an individual to develop an attachment to a form is easy. But to love the formless is more difficult. That's why in the 12th chapter, Sri Krishna says, Klesho adhitaras tesham, avyakta sakta chetasham, avyakta hi gatir dukham, deha vadbhira vapyate. So he says, if you are attached to your body, if I ask you, are you form or formless? I think a few years, 2-3 years ago, we had a class where we talked about, and most people said, I'm form. If I am form, then I have to be attached to a form, which is okay. It's okay to be attached to Jesus or Krishna, but one has to remember that that alone is not God. For me, Jesus is God. I love him. I relate to him, or Krishna, or Shiva, Guru Nanak. That's fine. But do not limit God to that, that Jesus alone is the path, or Krishna alone is the path, or Guru Nanak alone is. So when you limit God, then you are defiling him. So you say, yes, for me, this works for me. And there's nothing wrong with that. But for somebody else, it may be Buddha. For somebody else, it may be Allah. And that's fine if that's what works for him. So because the moment you say it has a form, then you are limiting it. So it has to be formless. And all forms that we see, whether we see the mother goddess or elephant god, Ganpati or Shiva or Jesus or Muhammad or Guru Nanak or all Mahavir, all the gods and the prophets that appeared are that same consciousness taking different name and form and appearing for us for our benefit. Because I need a form, especially on my beginning of my spiritual journey. But in meditation, we ultimately go, even if we meditate on a form, you have to go from form to formless. That form is all pervading. So when I love Krishna, Krishna is this whole universe. Jesus is this whole universe. That's why they talk about Father in heaven. And nowhere in Bible there is a picture of Father in heaven, even though people have made one with the beard and all. That's not, when Jesus said Father in heaven, he meant that Brahman, which is formless, all pervading. So the other aspect of this is that whatever I see, I have to respect everything as God. There is a story I had told before. I think you'll probably remember. It's a very nice story. But there was this monk who used to sit in his hut, and people would come and ask him for advice, and they had problems. And so one day he was sitting just in his own, joy, and this man came running, and he was all sweating and stressed and agitated, and he walked in the door of the hut, and the monk was sitting in the back like that, and he walked in the door, and he was just threw one slipper here, one slipper there, and just fell at the feet of the master. He says, sir, you please save me. You are the only one. He said, I have so many problems. I am so stressed. I've come to you for help. And I have walked 15 miles, to come see you. Those days they didn't have, cars and transport. I've walked 15 miles. So monk says, get out of here. What? Get out. Don't come back. What mistake did I make? I came and asking for your, for help. He said, yeah, but who brought you 15 miles? Those shoes, right? And you have no respect for the shoes. You're throwing one shoe here, one shoe there. You have to respect the shoes that brought you. Then only you can start by asking for the highest knowledge. So start by simple things. Take care of your car, your house, your pen, your clothes, keep your closet clean, keep your desk clean. So start by simple things. And so because God is everywhere, if God is in my house, I have to keep the house clean. If God is in my kitchen, I have to make sure I cook healthy food and then I offer it to God before I serve my family. So when we say it's countless, it is also formless. Then it is the pure light of consciousness. Light, we always think of the sun as light. You know, sun as light, or the tube light, or the flashlight. But when they say the light of consciousness, it's not a light, and people always mistake this word light. Is very confusing, because then they sit in meditation and say, you know, I'm going to see a light. And somehow they have heard from somebody that if you see a blue light,
yeah,
that is good. Or if you hear sound of, you know, ghongru, these bells. And so they'll sit and they're struggling to see. And sometimes they may even see the light. And if you have these experiences in meditation where you hear sound or you see light, it's okay, first of all. Number one. Number two, it may represent signposts. In certain faiths, they tell them that these are signposts that you are progressing in meditation. If you see a light or if you hear some sounds. Just as when I'm going from here to LA, you know, they have, you know, Lebec, Tejon Ranch, and then they have Valencia. So these are signposts that I'm reaching closer to Los Angeles. So similarly, these may be signposts, but you don't get attached to the signposts. You don't hold on to Lyons Avenue and say, oh, I love it here. No, I stop here. I, you know, pick up my cup of coffee, fill up my gas, and I move on. I don't get attached to the signpost. So similarly, the biggest problem we have in meditation is that when we have certain experiences, generally they are very pleasant, then we get very attached. When am I going to have that experience again? Or we start thinking that experience was God. Like, who? Last week somebody said that they saw Jesus. Yeah, she said that this lady told her that she saw Jesus in the church and it changed her life. That's very good. There's nothing wrong. That's beautiful. But if something came and went, that's not Jesus. Jesus is eternal. If something came and then went, that is good, but that is not the ultimate. Because the ultimate will never go. See, the Brahman, the consciousness, Om or Atman, is eternal. As we said, it is permanent. It will never come and go. So if it came and went, it is good, but it is not the ultimate. You want to find that Jesus within that you will never lose, that will never go away. And that is the ultimate. And that is what. And it is good. I'm not belittling. Sometimes people see God. You know, God appeared and he smiled at me and he said, what do you want, child? If it happened, it's good, but don't get attached to the experience, because realization is not an experience. You cannot experience God as an object, because God is the subject which illumines everything. It is the light of consciousness which illumines, which cannot be seen. And I have given this example before also, the flashlight. The example of the flashlight. You know, suppose there is a completely dark room, and I have a flashlight, and I put on the flashlight, and I can see the chair, the table, everything. But now somebody says, what kind of batteries are in there? Is it ever ready, or is it Duracell? So I say, okay, let me open the flashlight. I take out the battery, and then I turn the light on to try and see it. You can't. The battery cannot be seen by light, because the battery is illumining the light. So similarly, God or consciousness cannot be experienced as an object. It cannot be seen by the eyes, cannot be heard by the ears, it cannot be thought of by the mind or intellect, because it is that which illumines. So rather than looking for experience, and that is a very common error in people who meditate, that they look for experience, and that is very erroneous. So look for that which is illumining all experiences. All my experiences are being illumined by that consciousness, light of consciousness, which is me. And there's another beautiful story. There was this wrestler, or here I guess you can say linebacker, you know, football player, because these people who spend a lot of time in building up their body, and, you know, that's nothing against them, but then they do not have enough time to devote to their mind and intellect. So they are all the time spending it in building up the body. So there was this wrestler in India who all the time was lifting weights and very powerful. He had defeated all the wrestlers in the neighborhood, but was not very brilliant. So somebody wanted to have fun with him. And so one day he was in the morning running, this guy. He said, stop, Mr. Wrestler, where are you going? He said, I'm running. I want to fast. I have to run because I'm the fastest in the village and I want to compete in the nationals. He said, you can run fast? He says, yeah. He says, see this shadow, because the sun was behind him. He said, you see this shadow ahead of you, your shadow? Show me if you can catch your shadow. Can you catch your shadow? He said, of course I can catch my shadow. I'm the fastest man in the village. He said, okay, show me how. So he's running, trying to catch his shadow, and the shadow is going ahead. And he runs for miles, and finally he sits down exhausted. He says, I can't catch my shadow. And he's sweating, and he's so dejected and depressed. And so another wise man walks by. He says, he recognizes that Pelwan. He says, oh, Mr. Wrestler, you know, Arjun Singh or whatever, what are you doing here? Why do you look so sad? He said, I'm trying to catch my shadow, but I can't catch my shadow because it keeps running ahead of me. He said, I'll tell you a simple solution. He says, what? He said, turn around and start running toward the sun. And the moment you start running towards the sun, you will overtake your shadow. The shadow will be behind you. Oh, he says, you're a genius. He falls at his feet and starts running towards the sun, and he has beaten his shadow. So this story is very, very symbolic. Of course, you know, it's a humorous story, but the idea is that in this world, we are, as we were talking even outside, we're all the time chasing things of the world, trying to get and thinking that by getting that, I'll be happier. And so we keep chasing, and then we run and we are tired and we are exhausted and we get, you know, dejected and stressed, and the world is not giving me joy and I'm so sorrowful. And then the wise person comes and tells us, you are running after the world, but you are running away from God. God is the light of consciousness, the sun. He says, just turn towards the sun and the shadow will follow after you. So turn towards God and the world of objects, emotions, thoughts will follow after you. If you turn your back to God and run after the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts, they will run away from you and give you sorrow, give you misery. All you have to do is turn your mind around, run towards God, and then the world will follow after you. Then the world will be, that's what happens with these wise people. The world initially persecutes them, but once they become one with God, then the world follows them, whether it's Jesus or whether it's Guru Nanak or whether it's Buddha or whether it is all the saints. When they go towards the God, then the world goes after them. So you and I, we have to do that. We have to change the direction of our thinking to the inner light of consciousness, the illumining principle, God principle, and that's what even Swami Chinmayananda, somebody asked him, what is spirituality? He says, detach and attach. Detach from the world and attach to God. And that is all. In two lines, in two words, you can describe the entire goal of spirituality, detach and attach. And I think he brought up a very good point about detachment outside. Do you want to say, tell them, or should I? Go ahead. It's very good. I didn't ever thought about it. The difference between detachment and unattached. Okay. You know, it says in the beginning, unattached am I. Yeah. Is there a difference between detached and unattached? Go ahead.
I was looking, I did a Google. Mm-hmm. Always people who use English as a second language, you know, sometimes we have an idea we want to verify. Mm-hmm. I did a Google and I put an attached versus detached. And it said basically it's a synonym, but also there is a little difference, because an attached, you can never be attached.
Unattached.
Where detached, you have been attached and then you became attached. So it's a little bit different in that. And Dr. Mehta found that there is a good point.
Yeah, because unattached, see, this consciousness, Om, is unattached, was never attached. And was never attached to the world. While you and me, we are attached. So we have to detach from the world. And that is the difference between me and God, or between me and the consciousness. When I'm still on the beginning steps, I am attached and I have to detach. But ultimately, I realize that I was never attached. I was always unattached. And that is the difference between detached and unattached. So that is the...
Sometimes we do prayer and wishes for other people to get well.
Yes.
Or, you know, ask for, you know, good wishes to get cured or anything of that sort. So how would one view that activity from the context of detachment?
I think that's very good, because detachment does not mean you don't love. See, people misunderstand. They think detachment means I have to give up my wife, my children, my property, and put on orange clothes and go to the forest. If that is your desire, that's okay, but most of us can't do that. Detachment means not depending on anybody for my happiness, whether it's a person or a situation or an object. If the moment I depend on them for my happiness, I'm attached. If I do not depend, I still can love somebody, but without putting the key of my happiness in his pocket. That's what Gurudev said. Do not give the key where he can turn the lock and make you happy, make you unhappy. So detached means I function in the world, but do not depend on the world for my happiness. So that is called detached. And prayer is always good. Anytime you turn towards the Lord, it is nothing. You can never go wrong there. Because the Lord is all love, compassion, you know, kindness, sweetness, and peace. All these qualities, you know, peace and eternal bliss, happiness. All that is the Lord's qualities. So when you turn towards the Lord in humility and asking for help, that's very good. There's nothing wrong with that. The problem comes when you only go to the Lord when you have sorrow. See, when things are going fine, you say, who needs to go to church or temple? You know, it's okay. He's there. Let him be there. I'm having a good time. And then when the and when the world gives you blows, then you go crying, oh God, can you save me? No, that is the problem. See, but one should remember the God at all times. And when somebody is suffering, it's okay to pray for him, or even pray for your own health, or may everything go well in my life. Every morning one should, you know, go to the altar and pray to God and say, please be with me all day. May my day go well. May everything be fine. And may everything be fine with my family, and may everything be fine with the whole world. See, we not only pray for ourselves, but we pray for everybody, wherever people are suffering, whether in Houston or Florida or in the islands, or where there are wars going on. And, you know, there is so much killing in the Middle East and in Myanmar and everywhere. So you pray for all beings. That's why our prayer is Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sadve, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukh Bhag Bhavet. All our sessions end with that prayer, Chinmaya Mission. And that prayer is, may everybody be happy, may everybody be free from disease, may everybody have good fortune, and may none have suffering. So that is the prayer one should do, because when you send positive energy into the world, that gets multiplied. So these are few pointers. Actually, I was hoping to do a lot more, I think, this class. But it's good, you know, it's because these are very, very important points, and they're somewhat repetitive. But it's okay. You know, the more I find that in my case, if I hear something once, it doesn't stay. So the more frequently you hear, it makes a permanent groove. And then these I have to sit and contemplate, you know, probably take a picture of this on your phone and pick one or two qualities to meditate on. Maybe every day you can change, or maybe 1 week I meditate on that I am all pervading, or I am existence, consciousness, bliss, I am unattached. So you pick up these pointers. So these are very good pointers for meditation. So pick them, and we'll, next few weeks we'll continue. Maybe I'll try to go a little faster next time.
No,
that's good. Yeah, but it's good, because these are important points, and there are actually a lot of them is repetition, but a lot of them are, you know, similar. So it's okay, because this is this chapter, I think, to me is the most important chapter in this text, in my opinion. Again, I didn't write this book. I am not one to judge, but I find that this is, it's like this is the peak, you know, like how when you're climbing a mountain, you go like that, go to the peak, and then slowly, and then he again brings it down to simpler level. So this particular chapter is a little difficult, the 21st chapter, but then after that, it is again slowly coming down to our level. So that's why this book is good. Any questions, any comments about any of these points or factors? Yes, sure.
No, just following with the same idea, it doesn't bother, you know, to repeat, because we exercise our mind. Mm-hmm. And in addition, when you're trying to acquire this very difficult subject, you know,
yes,
God, the nature of God, you know, it's a big task.
Right.
So the only way that we can approach, since we don't know, we haven't had that experience, is to go with what we know.
Yes.
And that has been the way how we try to get deeper, you know. So in many cases, what we use metaphors in
right
ways, you know, to describe. And I was thinking, you know, it's very common to say that the trees don't allow us to see the forest, and like being something negative, really. It's not negative. It's the only way that we can be and meet both at the same time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Without trees, there is no forest.
Right.
We are immersed with them, you know. If we want to have the experience of the tree, we can be the trees, you know. But if we are the trees, we are not the forest. We cannot see the forest. So in order for us to appreciate, you know, to see the forest, you know, we have to get out.
Right.
Thrown away. But it's the same metaphor that you usually do between the ocean and the water.
Waves, yes.
Which is about the same idea. And in all of this, you know, in many occasions, we are completely misled because we don't see that. We use this our technique in order to have an idea about mm-hmm. what we're talking about. They're not essential realities, but rather ways, you know, that we use in order to have an idea about what we're talking about.
Right.
So metaphors use different ideas, you know,
yes,
repeating different ways. It's just a way to approach. And this is called perspective, you know. I mean, things depend on the perspective. Depends very much on the point of view.
Mm-hmm.
It depends where and from where we're talking about. You know, we will have one reality and we might have another one, but the real at the end, if I get it, there's no difference at all, but what happens is the view, the different points from view,
right,
where we approach.
Exactly. Actually, the entire spiritual literature is full of metaphors and symbols. Look at Bible. Jesus constantly talks in metaphors. He never, because this reality cannot be described. So the Bible is full of stories, and so is the Guru Granth Sahib, and so is the Upanishads, and so are the Upanishads, not so much. Upanishads directly go to the highest knowledge, but the Puranas, where the stories are in Hinduism, those are also full of stories and metaphors. The idea being that that's for the beginner through stories to take him to the Upanishads. So the Upanishad, this is actually the essence of the Upanishads, which takes you directly to the highest knowledge. But it is for people like us, it is good to go stepwise.
And the point that I was going to make is that sometimes by mistake, we stay with the metaphor.
Right.
And the metaphor we just use, you know, this came from the idea of the light, you know. We equate God with the light, you know,
right,
or the experience of God with the light. But really, that was a metaphor. Be careful, right, you know.
Because the light of consciousness is also said to be light that illumines even darkness. See, now light and darkness are opposite, right? There is a room is dark and you put on the light, the darkness runs away. So when they say it is the light which illumines darkness, what do I mean by that? What do you mean by light that illumines darkness? What it means is that if the room is lighted, I am aware of the light. But suppose you turn the light off and then somebody comes and says, are you in there? Now, I am sitting here in the room in complete darkness. Now, I say, wait a minute, let me put on the light to see I am there. No, I don't need to. I say, I am here. Even in darkness, I know my presence. Even when I cannot see this body, I cannot see the table, I cannot see anything, but I still know I am there. So that means this light of consciousness even illumines darkness. Even darkness I come to know because of that Lord. So that's why. Yeah, did you have a point?
Not as well as...
No,
go ahead.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, I think I was just thinking about, for instance, like some of the things that are happening in the world, the disasters and this sort of thing, and also the bad things that are happening, and how it's so easy to get caught up in naming them and complaining about them and feeling bad about them. But really, if it's all consciousness, it's just all playing itself out and trying to take a broader view of it.
Yes.
It's a little hard to explain, but that's sort of where I am in the process, instead of getting so involved in things that, I mean, before I would think were just horrible.
Right.
So it's like taking a different, like a bird's eye view of it.
True. And also,
be compassionate.
Be compassionate, but at the same time, understand that this is the play of nature.
Right.
And secondly, see what happens if 200 people die in a plane crash. You get so plane, 200 people died. Oh, it's so terrible. But 200 people die every day in California in car accidents. Every day. Does it even make the papers? No. So the point is, birth and death are meant for everybody. When the time to go is come, it will come. And then this destruction, of course, one has to do what one can to help that people. But again, it is karmic laws that are happening, you know, because we the global warming and the human beings are not listening to, that's my opinion. You know, that's why we are seeing a lot more natural calamities, because the temperature is rising all over the world. We are not doing anything. And it will continue to rise, because when 7 billion people drive cars, heat their homes, cook food, you know, all that, manufacture, factories, industries, the world is going to get warmer. And when it gets warmer, you will see these. So it's a consequence of our own action. And with 7 billion people, there's nothing you can do. The world is going to get hotter. You can delay it by doing, you know, using less energy and doing natural things and, you know, consuming and all that, consuming less. But sooner or later, it will happen. So unfortunately, it is our own doing, rather than blaming God that he is somewhere sitting there is malicious and sending Irma and Harvey and all that. I just see that, I mean, not to be cold or not to be uncaring, if you can do something to relieve their suffering, like, you know, you both of you went and, you know, loaded supplies, that's very good, that's wonderful. And because at that time you feel good that I'm doing something to relieve the suffering of even somebody I don't even know. And that's very good. So one should constantly look for opportunities to help. But at the same time, you take a bigger view, broader view of this whole situation. I agree with you that.
It also creates better peace of mind.
Yes.
For me.
Yes.
Not to be selfish, but it does. And
right.
And then maybe I'm more effective interacting with people.
Interacting and more sympathetic and more caring and all. Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Thank you. Did you have something?
You just said that karmic. Law of karma, right? Like whatever you do will come back to you in future. So what I'm thinking, like, you know, so if somebody is getting punished in their next birth for the previous birth's mistake, what I feel like, isn't it unfair to one soul if that person is getting punished for something they even don't know, or I mean they don't even remember?
Yes. True.
So, I mean, you know, sometimes the baby is born without legs or any malformation, any deformation. So isn't it like unfair to that soul that, like, they even don't know what they did in their last birth and they're getting punished?
True. But see, the soul is what? The mind and intellect. The body will perish. The body we either cremate or bury. It's the mind and intellect, which is the individuality. What distinguishes you from her and from her is not the body. You know, you have the same female body, the, you know, pretty much. Of course, there's a little difference in height and skin color and all that. But the body is the same, and also males are all the same. You know, we have the same body. What distinguishes you from her and her is the mind and the intellect, the emotions and the ideas. And this, in that is the individuality. That is who I am, not this body, not the consciousness. Of course, ultimately I am, but this body I am not. I am this individuality occupying this body. And in my, suppose in a particular life, suppose I was a child molester, and I molested 20, 30 children, and I died with nobody found out, nobody caught me. Now this individual, this mind and intellect, this individual who molested 20 children and was not punished, where will he get his punishment?
But like when they're getting punished, they even don't know what they're
It's okay, but that's what the spirituality will tell you, that there is a cause for every effect. It doesn't matter, but the point is that, so the idea being that once you know it, at least then don't do any wrong things. And be sympathetic to the person who is suffering, not saying that, oh, he's suffering because of his karmas. We develop sympathy and help and then learn from that, that at least I should not do that. The goal of whole of spirituality is for me, how I can learn from it. Yes, I can help others, but instead of blaming some higher power, the law of karma is 100% there. Nobody gets anything without deserving it. What we say that they do not end at this birth.
So I mean, what I feel like, you know, the law of karma should endorse, like the God should endorse in the same birth. So at least they know if I'm punished, I should know like what. Why
no,
am I punished?
90% of the karmas are in this life itself. If you do well, you succeed. If you do badly, you don't succeed. If you cheat, you get caught, sent to jail. 80 to 90% of the karmas are, but sometimes they are not. What it shows is that life is a cycle, and ultimately, instead of worrying about this, worry about Om. Because this life will go on. And see, we attach too much to this body, that this body is me, this life is me. This life is just a temporary appearance. I have had 84 million births, 8.4 million births before this, 84 lakh, before I became a human. You have to go through 8.4 million. So why do we get so attached to one birth?
And one more thing, like when we say like you love everybody, do not get attached to anybody or any object. But isn't it like when you love somebody, it's natural to get attached? I mean, how do you get detached?
Like your child when they go to college. You love the child, but you happily send them to college, right? Why? Because it's for that child's benefit. Otherwise, some parents get so. I know one mother who had her only daughter, and when she went to college, she actually left her husband and took an apartment next to that girl's college and living there. Now, that is attachment. That's not love. Then you are not allowing your daughter to grow. So what do you mean by detach? Okay, it's time for you to go. You know, it's time you go to college. May you do well. And you help them and encourage them. So that's what the love is. The attachment is when you are so holding on. Oh, my daughter didn't call me today. Oh, I'm crying. No, it's time for people cry so much when their kids go to college. You shouldn't. You should celebrate that my child is progressing. So that is the difference between attachment and love. You still love the child, but you want the child to do well. So don't have to cry when they go to college.
Just one point, in the case if the child is dead or is with malformations, could it be somebody's being punished for a previous life, okay?
Yeah.
Or it could be the punishment for the parents. Of
yes, that's another thing. Yes. Even the parents are being punished at that time.
Yes. Not necessarily the child paying for
it. The parents.
Whoever is connected with
exactly.
that soul is
right. And because they have also have done karmas that deserve it. So the point is that I should try to do the least harm to others and help as much as possible and be a source of love. So let's put the hands here. I find this helps a lot. So just do it And here we only do it 3 times. At home, when you have more time, you can even do it 5 times or 7 times each nostril. And then that spend a little more time with this breathing. So in the left nostril, breathe in and out. And pause between inspiration and expiration. And then again between expiration and inspiration. And if you wish, you can chant Om. Breathe in. Pause. Then mentally chant Om as you breathe out. Now do 3 or 4 times from the right nostril, slow and deep. Fill your lungs with air. Now alternate, breathe in through the right, out through the left, in through the left, out through the right. And bring your hands down and continue to breathe.
Atmaramohamevaja akhandanandarupoham ahameva ahamavyayah pratyakchaitanyarupoham shantoham prakrite paraha Shashvatanandarupoham Ahamevahamavyayah Tattvatitaparatmaham Madhyatitaparashivah Mayatita paranjyoti Ahameva ahamavyayah Nana rupa vyatitoham Chidakaroham achyutah Sukharupa swarupoham Ahameva ahamavyayah Maya tatkarya dehavi Mama nastyeva sarvada Svaprakashaikarupoham Ahameva ahamavyayah Gunatraya vyatitoham Brahmadinancha sakshyaham Anantanandarupoham Ahameva ahamavyayah Antajyotisvarupoham Kutastasarvagosmyaham Sarva Sakshi Swarupoham Ahameva Ahamavyayah Dvandvadi Sakshi Rupoham Achaloham Sanatanah Sarva Sakshi Swarupoham Ahameva Ahamavyayah Thank you.
Thank you.